Welcome to Perspectives, brought to you by Physicians Practice. I'm Drew Boxler, editor of Physicians Practice. Every 2 weeks, we explore key areas of a successful, thriving, independent practice. We'll hear from experts in the industry regarding best practices for billing and collections, answer your top coding questions, analyze current legal trends, malpractice landmines to avoid, and look at the hottest tech innovations to increase productivity and enhance the patient experience. Let's get started. Communications technology has flourished in recent years, due in part to the pandemic. Though you have more capabilities to track your patient's data, as well as contact and communicate with them through a variety of mediums, one aspect of ensuring optimal outcomes that may have been left behind is the health literacy of your patients. Today's guest, Dr. Chuck Lee, will discuss what low health literacy ultimately means for outcomes, how to identify whether or not your patient population is at a high risk for health literacy complications, and how you can increase your patient's health literacy levels in your practice and virtual communications.
My background is in internal medicine and also in medical informatics. My ethnic background is that I'm a Korean American. Mm-hmm. I moved to the United States when I was 7 years old. Wow. And one of the challenges I had when I was growing up was understanding English and some of the challenges that a lot of people who don't speak English have in communicating in healthcare systems. So as I was going through my medical training, one of the things that I was very interested in was how healthcare providers and patients communicate with each other, particularly around understanding their diagnoses, understanding what to do. And obviously, if you have difficulty with the English language, as I did when I was growing up, that represents a major challenge. So I was always interested in how our healthcare system dealt with those issues. And in my informatics training after I finished medical residency, one of the areas that I was very interested in is how could we leverage technology to embed a lot of these solutions into our system. Mm-hmm. So that we're depending on the individual provider to initiate that, you know, that initiative. So that's kind of where I came into this. Okay. And then in 2005, I submitted a grant to the NIH to develop what we created, that's called Meducation, which has to do with providing low literacy, multi-language medication instructions to reduce medication errors and improve adherence. And that's how I got involved with this entire topic.
Just for the audience.
It is basically a personal skill. And it comprises of three different things. Number one, once I explain this to you, I'll just explain why this is a problem and how we can solve this.
Okay.
So number one is, can the person, well, first of all, when you're talking about health literacy, it occurs at a time when you're seeking information. That is when you get a cancer diagnosis or you're looking up your particular condition, that's when a person needs to have the skill set. Okay. So just because you are a physicist doesn't necessarily mean you're health literate, but you do have the skills to overcome some of these challenges. Okay.
Okay.
So the first issue for health literacy is, do you know how to obtain information? Can you go find it on the internet, be able to differentiate credible sources from non-credible sources? So that's a big challenge. So that's number one. Number two is, once you find that information, can you read and understand what that means? Okay. And obviously, if you have language issues, that's a problem. If you have low grade level, that's an issue. And then lastly, once you have that information, do you know how to act appropriately for yourself based on what your particular issues are? Mm-hmm. So that's the three things. Number one, can you find information? Can you read and understand what it means? And then can you act based on that? So it's just common sense information, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, obtaining information, one of the problems is there's just so much information out there that a lot of people don't know what's credible and not credible, right? So the best way to overcome that is that there's several surveys saying that they view physicians as a credible source of resources, right? So if our physicians or healthcare system can provide that information to the patient at the time they need that information, that overcomes a lot of that overwhelmingness of there's just so much out there, I don't know what to do. Okay. The second is obviously reading and understanding. So one of the challenges is that health literacy affects about one third of the US population. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's really challenging to know who is low health literate and who is not low health literate.
Yeah.
So what the CDC recommends is that you should treat everybody as if they were low health literate, because you can't do an assessment on the spot, because you know, those things take time and nobody does it in clinical practice anyways. And obviously if you're able to provide information that is low reading level and in multiple languages, that can overcome that particular issue. The third one is being able to act. So one of the challenges that a lot of people have is they receive a lot of information, but they don't know what's relevant to me, what's not relevant to me. So if you're a male and they're giving you information about what to do when you're, you know, breastfeeding or pregnant, that's not an issue for you, right? Or, you know, if you have one condition and they're talking about another condition in the same package, then that's a problem. So being able to concisely provide relevant information, which can be tailored to that individual's needs, can reduce some of that information that's not relevant. And lastly, if you can put this in a visual manner, that is, you know, put it into an actionable calendar that they can follow, or put it into a mobile device with reminders, those are things that can help patients overcome some of these, the ability to assess what they need to do once they leave. So to give you one example is that when patients are discharged from a hospital, they get the discharge instructions about what their condition is, then they get a medication list of all the medicines they should take, and they should take this one 3 times a day, this one 2x a day. And then if you're on polypharmacy with like 10 different medicines, once you get home, you have to figure out, well, what does that mean? Which medicine do I take at what time of day? And that's a challenge for a lot of patients. Mm-hmm. So being able to create a calendar, say, on, you know, every day you should take these, on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you should take these at, you know, in the morning and in the evening, can overcome a lot of those things. And lastly is around numeric literacy. So instead of saying, you know, for a liquid medicine that had a certain concentration and saying, you know, take 2.3 milligrams each dose, and then you got to calculate, well, this is 10 milligrams per 5 mL. What does that mean for volume? So if they get a decimal point wrong, mm-hmm. that's a factor of 10, right? That they could actually miscalculate.
Yeah.
So being able to give them exact volumes per dose for a given concentration, it is an important consideration, especially for parents who are stressed out, you know, with a child that, you know, has an ear infection in the middle of the night. It's really easy to miscalculate some of those doses. So that's another added issues around a part of health literacy as well. So that's a long-winded question, but that's the three components about health literacy.
If your patients have low levels of health literacy, the instructions that you give them may not seem relevant to them, or may even appear overwhelming, Dr. Lee says.
You know, you want people to follow our instructions. And oftentimes when we give them information that may not be necessarily exactly relevant to them or overwhelming, it leads to inaction. And obviously inaction leads to lower health outcomes. So there is a direct link between health literacy and health outcomes. So this is why, you know, health literacy is a really nice gauge, because there are things you can do about it. You know, if somebody has a low social, you know, economic class, you know, there's not that much that a provider can do. But in terms of providing information that is actionable at a lower grade reading level in their language, is something that's within the ability of the healthcare system to be able to do.
There are some particular ways that physicians in smaller and independent practices can use technology to adjust their communication efforts for patients with low levels of health literacy.
Solutions, you want something that is scalable, not something that is just a one-off thing. And there are things you can do to in terms of getting feedback. So one of the challenges I had as a provider was that, you know, when I talked to my patients when I was a resident in clinical practice, I would say, do you understand these instructions? And they almost universally say, nod their head and say yes, right? Yeah. But they get that glazed look in their eye, like, you know, that they don't understand.
Yeah.
So, you know, but what that tells you is that oftentimes these patients are embarrassed to say that they don't understand. Mm-hmm. So giving them written information at a lower grade reading level and say, you know, and then going over those together, saying, you know, what do you take every day? You know, when do you take this medicine? Just to confirm that they understand, that's the teach back method, is something that providers can do relatively quickly in practice as well.
Smaller independent practices can also utilize their practice space to enhance health communications with patients.
Putting up signages in multiple languages, depending on your local needs. I live in North Carolina, and in the Charlotte area, there's a huge Vietnamese population. Mm-hmm. So if there is that population in your community, or if you're working in the FQHC, having those types of access. And obviously, if you have staff that's bilingual, that's kind of hard to do.
Yeah.
You know, hiring those folks is challenging. And, you know, another option is, I'm just talking about language issue at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do have a population that does speak that language and you don't have the bilingual staff, you know, there are telephone services available through some of the local interpretation services within the hospitals. They have staff. But even if they don't, there are other language services available via telephone. But those can be a little bit expensive. Mm-hmm. So that's why a lot of folks don't use those. But in terms of the literacy aspect, just talking to them and just being aware that literacy is an issue, I think is probably the biggest step that you can take. And then obviously confirming that they understand prior to leaving that visit is an important consideration as well. You know, one of the things that we've had challenges with was around technique. When you see some people, when you get interested in this topic and you say, you know, can you show me how you use your inhaler? You'd be shocked to see how many people misuse their inhaler.
Oh, wow.
So just being able to have them demonstrate or even giving them video sources of video demonstrations. And that's one of the things that we built into our system was, you know, we're asking them to, you know, inject by durian, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they get it. And nobody explains it to them. They get home, then they got to figure things out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's one of the things that I would like providers to do is, you know, don't think that patients will always figure things out. If you can help them or, and some of this responsibility is on the pharmacists as well,
mm-hmm.
But making sure that they feel comfortable knowing how to use some of these more complex medicines is one of the big challenges. So in terms of visual reinforcements, some of those things can be very useful. And people don't have time or they're going through the drive-through and, you know, they sign that thing saying, you know, I don't need, you know, counseling. You know, spending the time or giving them resources to be able to review those things from home is really important.
Physicians can also partner with pharmacists to increase health literacy and, more specifically, the comprehension of medication instructions for patients.
Yeah. So one of the challenges is, you know, non-adherence is, you know, there's a primary and secondary. Primary one is somebody comes with an acute problem, you know, you prescribe them something and they never pick it up, right? So that's primary non-adherence. So secondary non-adherence is they pick it up, but they don't necessarily use it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think depending on the reasoning behind some of these, a lot of times I, as a provider, never got feedback that they didn't pick up the medicine, right? But it would be nice to know that information. So in terms of the technology aspect, you know, having some form of a notification that this was prescribed, but it was never picked up, I think would give some degree of information back to the provider to say this particular person has a compliance issue, but you know, this one doesn't. So maybe you pay a little bit more attention to make sure that, you know, if it was an antibiotic after a stent placement, where, you know, that really matters, right? Yeah. It's an anticoagulant, and they never picked it up. You know, that's where you may want to have somebody carefully following them versus some other conditions where it may not be as big an issue.
Up next, Dr. Lee gives some advice on how practices can engage in outreach to increase health literacy levels in their patient populations.
I think having some credible resources that can be readily available to all providers. Now I'm going to talk about FQHCs as an example because they are so under-resourced. But making those kind of things available to all FQHCs that they can, you know, tap into as a community. You know, there are these community purchasing organizations out there, but if you can think of that as the same thing for education resources through the NIH or ARC or some others, HRSA, I think would make it simpler for a lot of providers because you don't have to go and search for information. You can say, here's a whole bunch of things on some disease from HRSA or ARC. So I think that would be a way to go. But the problem is that the federal government has a hard time choosing resources that they don't grant fund. So maybe it's through Mayo Clinic or maybe it's through some other Cleveland Clinic or something that have a credible brand behind them might be another source.
There are some particular teaching methods that might be employed in the practice or even through virtual consultations.
I think the first thing you got to do is understand that there is health illiteracy out there. And there's numeric illiteracy out there. And I think if you just go in knowing that this particular patient could, because they're elderly or they have some other issues, that I think that in itself can make you aware of what you should do. You can't just go in because that person is college educated, assume that they know what they're doing. Because they may know nothing about biology and, you know, medicine. So just making yourself aware is probably the biggest thing you can do. And then once you do that, once you have a better understanding of that, then you can take the steps to say, well, if this person doesn't understand what I'm saying, how can I make it better or simpler? Maybe I can just ask them to restate what I just said. Tell me back what the medicine is for, when they should be taking it. And one of the biggest things that I saw actually through the EHR is through FDB, we receive a lot of medication instructions from providers to pharmacies, okay? And one of the things that is required is that for acute PRN medicines, there is a criteria that an indication from the medicine is required, okay? Unfortunately, for chronic meds, that is not a requirement, which means that a lot of times patients are on, you know, 8 different medicines and the pill bottle doesn't say what it's for. That is for their heart disease, it's for their cholesterol. And what they do is they go to the pharmacy and they know this is, you know, $20 copay. I don't know what it's for. Maybe I can skip it. Or maybe I can split the pills to make it last longer. So I think just being able to put an indication on the pill bottle label can go a long way toward helping patients differentiate. This is for my, you know, immune disorder. This is for my, you know, diverticulosis. This is for my rheumatoid arthritis. And then every time they look up the pill bottle, it reinforces what they're doing. But if that is not there, all I know is I take it twice a day. And that's a huge problem. And that's something simple we could do. But, you know, when I talk to providers about why that's not on the pill bottle, they say, well, in the e-prescribing system, it's an extra click, and it's like, just it's that one little extra click that can make a huge difference. But you know, I know that they're busy, but they don't think about the impact that selecting the indication could have mm-hmm. on the outcome later on. And that's what I'm saying is, if you keep thinking about this, they could now see that it's worth that little time to put those things on there. So I would say that's one of the biggest things we could do.
And finally, some key takeaways from Dr. Lee.
Just the fact that you're interested in this topic is huge. And I think the more that we get this out there, and I would say the biggest thing that I've seen is that of the people who are have particular interest, have a personal story. They have a grandmother who had an issue. They have a mom who had an issue. You know, they went with their mom to the hospital. They saw the package, read the package for them. And, you know, even I, as a doctor, I couldn't understand what they were saying. Mm-hmm. Or they were getting conflicting information because one was for heart disease, one was for a stroke. And one said one thing, another one said another thing. And then how do you differentiate? And then understanding that patients who have a medical condition are under a lot of stress. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard for them to assess even, you know, things that normal people could assess. So making things as simple and obvious as possible. And I think the more people have the experience of being the patient or a caregiver for a patient would make them appreciate the effort that providers take to do these things. And so it's I would say it's a balance between limited resources in terms of time and, you know, education material and the benefit of the patient. And, you know, I try to put the patient first mm-hmm. And spend that extra time. And I think family practice and internal medicine, where we can spend a little bit more time with the patient and review things with the patient, are better positioned to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, having done rotations with surgeons and other, I know that they have to specialize and spend and not go over a lot of these things, but even they need to, you know, be sensitive to a lot of these issues as well. So it's going to take time. And I think the more we talk about it and the more that we can automate a lot of these so that we automatically know that they speak Spanish and give material in Spanish, I think would go a long way to solving this, but it's going to take time. You know, I've been at this since 2005, and you know, we've made some progress, but you know, we still got a long way.
Thank you for taking the time to speak with me, Dr. Lee, and thank you all for listening to Perspectives, brought to you by Physicians Practice. We hope you subscribe or listen to podcasts, rate us, and let us know what topics you would like to hear more about. For more practice management insights from the top experts in the field, be sure to visit us at physicianspractice.com and sign up for our newsletter.